Moncrief on News Talk.
When the actor Penelope Keith died, BAFTA quickly issued a tribute to her, using the word passing. Enter house-hunting TV presenter Kirsty Alsop, who insisted that the proper term is death. Some agreed with this, some didn't. And doesn't matter if we know what's being referred to. Rachel Gatto is a Galway-based grief coach and the author of Flying on the Inside, a memoir of trauma and recovery. Rachel, good afternoon.
Hello, Sean.
Is it better to be more explicit about your terms?
Well, there's a school of thought that says yes, that clarity and non-ambiguous language is very, very important, because we sort of fell into softening the, you know, the absolute fact that we're going to die by using words like passed away, transitioned, crossed over, instead of saying that somebody died. And it is an interesting question, and it's an interesting point. The grief experts would say we must use words that are clear and non-ambiguous. So we must say somebody died, they are dead, or they're dying.
Why?
Because it removes the the fact is that we're all going to die at some point in time. And it almost removes the reality of our experiences as human beings if we don't use language that matches the actual experience. When somebody's born, we don't use euphemisms. We use the fact that somebody was born. So it's kind of strange that we tried to soften the finality of the end of our lives with words that could almost suggest, you know, there's an impermanence to death. So it is important that we stay factual about a subject that affects every single person on this planet. So it's important that we are real, that we understand that life begins and ends, and that people do die. They don't fall asleep. They don't pass somewhere. They're actually dead forever. And that's the subject of grief. The grief journey lives as long as the person is dead, if that makes sense.
Mm. But at the same time, people don't literally think that, you know, they haven't really died. They've just fallen asleep for a while. They know that. And maybe the use of those terms, it is softening, as you say, but for someone who's in the midst of grief, it might help them a little.
Most certainly. And I trained with world grief expert called David Kessler in the United States, and he's very clear that we should say death, dead, dying. From a personal level, I was three times bereaved. And when my husband died in an accident, I wasn't inclined to say he passed. I was inclined to say he died in a terrible, tragic accident. And so my feeling is, I work as a grief educator and as a grief coach. My feeling is that we should mirror the language of the person that we're speaking to, because it certainly would be most unkind to drag somebody into language that they're not prepared to use, or they're not clear on, or there is actually something they would rather not say. So I think it stems back very much to mirroring who we're speaking to. But if we're speaking from a personal standpoint, I can say that I prefer the words dead, you know, death, those, because it's more comfortable with it. But, you know, the Victorians, they became sort of very concerned with all of this stuff, and they were the people who started to kind of soften the language around it. So I think it really depends on the person. I most certainly would never call somebody out on it. That's for sure. I would definitely respect the language that people use.
And when your husband died, if people use terms like you lost your husband or your husband has passed away, did you find that irksome?
No, I most certainly didn't. I was glad if anybody spoke about it, and if anybody came to me and wanted to have the conversation about it, because we do know that the time around death, dying, loss, funerals, and all the ritual to go with it can be a very busy time. But very soon after, the silence begins to set in, and people are often really glad if somebody brings the subject of their bereavement or there's loss into the conversation. So it's an ever-changing subject, but it is a subject that's very, very current at the moment. And you see it popped up in the newspapers today. I was actually contributing to an article on RIP.ie this week about the language around bereavement and loss. And do we say passed or died? Or some tradition use the word transition or crossed over. And I most certainly wouldn't personally have a problem with that. But in terms of when we speak about it in a more formal or academic setting, it is encouraged that we use the words death, dying, non-ambiguous words.
Yeah, no, because I suppose when people say passed over, that, you know, there may be, that is underpinned perhaps by some religious or spiritual belief that actually death isn't permanent, that you've gone someplace else.
Most certainly. And that has to be respected too.
What do you think in Ireland, I don't know if people say, they might say passed away. I don't know if they'd say passed that often, but people would often say lost.
Yes.
And we know what that meant.
We most certainly know what it means. And one of my teachers would immediately pipe up and say, lost? Where is he lost? Where is he gone? Where did you lose him? But I wouldn't be as stringent as that. I would just be very understanding that that's the language of the person that I'm speaking with at the time.
Yeah. Because if someone says they've lost someone, they are very much describing their own experience, that there's a profound sense of loss.
100%. And I would certainly be respectful of that. And there is loss. When somebody dies, we may lose a relationship, financial situation, health, a future that's completely altered. So there are losses around death. I think what they're focusing on is the actual event itself.
Yeah. Do you find now, I mean, that the part of the reason why we're talking about this, as I said, the introduction was about what Kirsty Alsop said about the use of the word past. And in the UK, or particularly in England, do people tend to be a bit more circumspect around the subject of death?
Most certainly. My experience is different. I have an English tradition in my past, and I remember going to an aunt's funeral. I was in my 30s, and the name of the person who had passed or died was not really mentioned. And remember, it was probably a month after the person had died when we held the funeral. And so it could have been a gathering about something entirely different, because it was incredibly polite, incredibly distant from the actual event. And we most certainly didn't mention the dead person. We just had a gathering and some prayers and went to a crematorium. So it was really quite distant from the finality of it. And the language we used, yes, would have been Auntie Edith passed.
Mm, yeah. Whereas in here, it's largely informed by Catholicism to a degree, but there's almost a procedure that kicks in almost automatically when someone has died.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we're very good at rituals, and, you know, rituals are formed around death and dying for a reason. And it's the bringing together, the closure, and bringing people together for closure. And maybe, if it's appropriate, celebrating a life. And we have lots of language around that. We know exactly what to do. It's actually a couple of weeks and maybe months after the end of the ritual that the difficulty set in and the isolation sets in, because for most people, their world just continues. And for the person who's gone through the bereavement or the loss or the death of somebody, their world has altered or feels like it's stopped. And this, I think, is the reason why we do need to have an ongoing conversation and develop congruent language around a universal human experience, so that we can feel more comfortable holding these conversations, so that we can feel more at ease approaching somebody who's had a death in recent months, and maybe reach out and have the deeper conversation. Because generally what tends to happen is, and people listening will be nodding their heads at this, and I've been through it so many times myself, is that rather than hurt or offend the person who has gone through the loss, which they perceive it will do so by mentioning it, they cause a silence. And the silence extends around that person who's been through a bereavement, and they can end up feeling almost embarrassed or a burden to people, because they will have the need to talk about their experience and share the deep experiences, the deep emotions, the pain of loss. But somehow we kind of fall down a couple of months after our very, very, very good rituals. Mm. And so, you know, grief education, I think, is an important part, and particularly for children, the younger children coming up, that they understand what it is and what the experience of being dead is. Because with euphemisms, we could potentially, you know, educate people to think that it is not permanent.
Yeah, why is that, do you think? I suppose it could be that, as you said, the ritual there is a form of words for people there to automatically use. But then 2 months down the line, there's that embarrassment almost seems to kick in.
There is. There's a distance and an embarrassment. And we've all done it, haven't we? We've met somebody who's been through a bereavement. We've made up our minds in our heads that we're going to reach out. We're going to take the apple pie around. We're going to do these things. But somehow it just does not happen the way we imagined it would be. And for us, we sort of move into a place of shame, and then it goes too long, so we feel we can't reach out. And on the other side, the person who actually has been experiencing the pain of the loss and somebody dying in their lives, there's this great big gap that opens up. And a lot of people actually end up struggling, you know, in so many ways of, you know, in the workplace, because we don't have a language around bereavement and loss in the workplace. So people struggle at work, productivity goes down, absenteeism, people are ill and unwell, because grief affects us body, mind, heart, and soul and spirit. So we imagine that it might be just emotions, but actually it can be physical. People don't sleep. They can be anxious. I mean, it's a completely altered existence. And our worlds are carrying on. And I remember the isolation myself after my husband drowned. People were wonderful and continue to be wonderful, but nobody spoke about him to me. Nobody asked me, how was I at this time? Somebody say, how are you managing? But that's sort of an open question. And what I wanted was somebody to say, are you suffering? Because I was suffering dreadfully. But nobody mentioned it. So that meant I mirrored what was going on outside me. And I never spoke about my loss, my bereavement, my shame around what I was feeling. And there were so many emotions and feelings attached to it, but they all got silenced because we didn't have a language, and we still don't really have a language of how to interact with somebody around their losses.
How long did that go on for you for?
It continued. I had 3 bereavements in 3 years, and I was actually pregnant when my husband died. So it was a huge, major transformation in my whole life, in not in a positive way. It happens not just to me, it happens to most people, the silence that extends within weeks after the loss. In Ireland, we've got the month's mind, and that is such a beautiful ritual that happens. But most people end up finding that they are alone with their pain and alone with their altered reality pretty quickly. And people cope. We do cope. We are designed to cope with bereavement and loss. In fact, it's really interesting because we know how to be born. We know actually the body knows how to die. There is a system that happens within our bodies when we die. But we know how to grieve, but we don't know how to speak about it. So it is quite a strange thing. It happens to everybody. Everyone is going to be bereaved at some point in life.
Rachel, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Rachel Gatto there, a grief coach based in Galway and the author of Flying on the Inside, a memoir of trauma and recovery.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.